Good morning, folks, and welcome to this week's episode of the Legal Beagle podcast. Today, we're going to learn some Latin. We are going to talk about a theory of law called respondeat superior. And if you've never heard that, that is a Latin term that means let the master answer. It is a doctrine in the law that basically promotes the idea that an employer is responsible for their employee's acts if the employee's acts are for the benefit of the employer. So let's unpack that for a minute. If you get into an accident and it is with someone who is working or on the job at the time of the accident, then the employer is ultimately responsible to you for your injuries. But it's not as simple as were you working, yes or no. The analysis can go much, much deeper. In fact, when you get into looking at vicarious liability, it's really referring to a situation where someone is held responsible, and that someone's typically an employer, for the acts or failure to act of another person. In a workplace context, that means an employer can be liable for the acts or failure to act of its employees, provided that it can be shown that the act or failure to act was for the benefit of the employer. And so again, I know that sounds like I'm talking in circles, but it's important to understand how we get through this analysis. What we as attorneys do is we look to see whether the employee was in the course and scope of their employment. So that's, again, more legalese, but really it means that the injured person or the person who caused the injury, because in our context, we're looking at it from a personal injury perspective. You can use the same analysis for workers' compensation claims, but we don't do that work. And so I wanted to discuss what it looks like from a personal injury perspective. So course and scope of employment. It means that the defendant driver, the person who may have caused the accident or injury, was an employee at the time that the accident occurred, and that the employee was doing something for the benefit of their employer. Now, a situation that we see quite a bit is when the employee is on their way to work, and whether or not that is considered being or acting in the course and scope of their employment. Not necessarily. In fact, there is pretty good case law here in Arizona that says it's not the case if there's no benefit to the employer, meaning the employee is just expected to show up for work. And then when they leave, essentially, they're no longer acting as an employee of that company. There's no responsibility of that company to cover their employees going and coming to work. However, what if that employee was running a work errand? What if that employee was sent out to get bagels on a Friday morning for the entire staff and they cause an accident? That would be for the benefit of the employer. And so that would be a standard that we could meet on our side of the table when it comes to proving that the employee was acting in the course and scope of their employment. Another example, what if the employee is paid for their commute around town? And so they're not necessarily out running an errand, but they're commuting to and from. You see this in sales capacity a lot. Sales reps are out traveling all over town, and they're usually given some sort of compensation for that, whether it be through mileage or some other pay that they receive. They would be acting in the course and scope of their employment. You start to see really unusual situations when you start to think about cases where a security guard may act inappropriately on behalf of the employer in removing someone from the employer's premises. So an example that I've seen before is a bouncer at a bar may be a little too physical in removing a patron from the bar. And the patron gets injured, and they want to bring a claim against the bar, saying your bouncer acted inappropriately. It's a little challenging there because the employer could argue that the acts of the bouncer were not for the benefit of the bar. I would argue they are, that the bouncer and the conduct that the bouncer displays during that removal is for the benefit of the bar, because they're trying to keep everything under control and make sure that, you know, things don't get out of control and it doesn't escalate into something far worse than simply removing a patron. But those are some of the arguments that you might see. Now, if you have an employee who does something way far to the right of what we would consider being a benefit for an employer. So for example, we had a case a few years ago where a client of ours discovered that while she was grocery shopping, someone was taking photographs underneath her dress while she was shopping. And this someone was someone stocking the shelves for this grocery store. Now, through our discovery, we learned that the employee didn't actually work for the grocery store. They worked for a third party, a vendor that would come in and actually stock their particular products on their grocery store shelves. So then we go after both the grocery store itself as well as the third party. And the third party is arguing with us that the act of taking these photographs were not for the benefit of the employer. And I think that would probably be a good argument. The reason it failed in our case is we were able to find evidence that the employer had been warned about this person's conduct in the past and still continued to employ them. And so that allowed us to still obtain that vicarious liability and keep the employer on the hook. The reason this is important to understand is because sometimes injuries are not minor. Sometimes injuries can be very, very severe. And if you're dealing with a situation where you or a loved one is injured and severely injured, there may not be enough money in a traditional personal automotive policy to cover you for your injuries. And so looking at the employer and their liability in this situation could be very helpful in making sure that you're fully compensated for your injuries. So that's why it's important to understand this Latin term, respondeat superior, which essentially leads us to vicarious liability. Is the company liable for the acts of their employee? It can get far more complicated than what I've shared here in this podcast, because you can start talking about employees that work electronically. Like through our firm, we have a virtual firm and a lot of employees are scattered all throughout the United States. You can talk about dual purposes and whether people are independent contractors. So the analysis can continue to evolve based on the facts of that particular situation. So as always, if you have questions or you find yourself in a situation, you want to just understand it a little bit more, please reach out to me. You can reach me by email, which is on our website. You can always call me 602-531-3911 and we can chat about it. Have a great week. Thanks, guys.